The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 20, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Adventure of the Devil's Foot. Episode 2, The Affair of the Babbling Butler. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Harry Bartell.
Tonic and Cremel Shampoo present the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Now suppose we begin by calling on Mr. Holmes' biographer and friend, the genial Dr. Watson. We find him in his comfortable firelit study, leaning back in his easy chair, ready to begin his story. The fire feels good tonight, doesn't it, Dr. Watson?
Indeed it does, but sit down, Mr. Bell, sit down and let's get on with the story.
You are in a hurry, aren't you?
Well, I suppose I am. As a matter of fact, the adventure I'm going to relate was one of the most gruesome experiences I ever hoped to encounter. Perhaps I'd better not tell it after all. It brings up memories.
Come now, Dr. Watson, you're not going back on us now. You promised last week to tell us, what was the name of the story?
The Adventure of the Devil's Foot. Oh, the Cornish horror. The very thought of it makes my blood run cold.
I can hardly wait, Dr. Watson. Now, Dr. Watson, how about the Devil's Foot or the Cornish horror?
It was the spring of the year 1897. Holmes's iron constitution had shown some signs of giving way due to a particularly arduous and nerve-wracking winter. In March of that year, Dr. Moore Agar of Harley Street gave positive injunctions that Holmes get out into the country for a protracted rest. Well, the third week in March found us settled in a small cottage near Poldhu Bay at the further extremity of the Cornish Peninsula.
Isn't that rather a bleak country for a convalescent, Dr. Watson?
Bleak is putting it mildly. I've never known such grim surroundings, but it suited Holmes admirably. He seemed to blossom in that weird and foreboding fog-swept district.
Just his natural perverseness, I suppose.
Oh, I dare say. Our little whitewashed cottage stood on a grassy headland. From its windows, we looked down upon the whole sinister semicircle of Mount's Bay, that old death trap, with its fringe of black cliffs and surge-swept reefs. In every direction, there were traces of some vanished race which had left as its sole record strange monuments of stone. Holmes spent most of his time pottering round these weird ruins. Everything was going along peacefully until one morning our simple and healthy routine was violently interrupted, and we were precipitated into the middle of a series of gruesome and nerve-shattering events.
Quite a surf this morning, eh, Watson? You can see the spray flung up against our windows, and we're a good 100 feet above sea level. I don't think I shall venture out today. Bad weather. Old boy is certainly lashing himself into a fine frenzy.
What do you mean, the old boy, Holmes?
The devil, Watson. The devil himself.
What are you raving about?
Didn't I tell you that the natives hereabouts refer to that seething death trap down there as the devil's cauldron? They think the old gentleman himself lives there.
How unsettling.
Yes, a very interesting superstition. You know, Watson, this locality is supposed to have been the last resort of devil worship in England.
Oh, really? Really?
Many scientists believe that those huge prehistoric monuments of stone were part of a temple given over to the Prince of Darkness.
Preposterous.
Oh, I don't know. It's as logical as most of the theories that endeavor to explain their existence. The superstition goes on to say that when the devil was finally driven from his temple, he took refuge in the bay down there. Yes, they claim that on stormy nights you can hear his hoofbeats as he races up and down the rocks.
Holmes, what are you trying to do? Give me a case of nerves?
Hello, what's this? Someone is running up our path, his cloak flapping about like a giant bat.
Why, it's that Tregennis fellow, the one who boards with the vicar.
Mortimer Tregennis, eh? I wonder what's happened. Face as white as a sheet. Couldn't look more upset if he'd seen Beelzebub himself. Open the door, Watson.
Mr. Holmes, thank heaven I find you at home. The most terrible thing has happened. I can scarcely believe it.
Oh, sit down, my dear fellow, sit down. That's better. Now, perhaps you can tell us what has happened.
My family, my sister, we were playing cards.
Oh, slowly now, take your time.
My family, my sister and my two brothers, it's too terrible. Why, just last night I was with them at the house. Tredenick Warfare, it's called. All well and happy. We played cards, and now, without warning, I can't believe...
Easy, Tregennis, easy. There's a good fellow.
I left them last night. My sister Brenda, my two brothers, Owen and George.
What time was that?
The clock in the church steeple over at Polo was chiming 10 o'clock as I closed the front door behind me. I'd left them all in the card room, laughing and in good spirits.
And?
This morning, being an early riser, I was out taking a walk before breakfast when Dr. Richards overtook me in his carriage with the news that he'd been sent for and a most urgent call from Tredenick Walther. Something terrible had happened to my family. I jumped in beside him and he whipped up the horses.
And what did you find?
Oh, Mr. Holmes, it was terrible, ghastly. My two brothers and my sister, there in the card room, just as I had left them. But what a change. What a ghastly change.
Yes?
Brenda lay back stone dead in her chair. And my two brothers sat on each side of her, laughing and shouting and singing. The senses stricken clean out of them. And all three of them, my poor dead sister and my two demented brothers, retained upon their faces an expression of ghastly horror. A convulsion of terror.
How terrible.
Yes. Dr. Richards was so overcome at the sight that he fell fainting into a chair.
Anyone else in the house besides your sister and brothers?
Only Mrs. Porter, the old housekeeper.
I presume it was she who found them this morning.
Yes. She always goes through the house in the mornings, airing it out before the family comes down. When she reached the card room, the shock was too much for her. She's had a nervous collapse. We had to put her to bed.
No wonder.
An exceptional case. Most exceptional.
That's what we thought. We could find no traces of strangers in or around the house. Nothing was stolen, nothing touched. The vicar believes you are the only one who can solve the case, Mr. Holmes. He insisted I come to you.
I shall be only too glad to handle the matter, of course. But first I must ask you a few questions.
Anything, Mr. Holmes, anything.
To begin with, Mr. Tregennis, why do you live with a vicar, separated from your family?
Well, as a matter of fact, we had a slight argument a few years ago about some property it was. But that was all settled long ago. We were on the best of terms.
Now, Mr. Tregennis, about last night. Do you recall anything at all that was out of the ordinary?
There was one thing that occurs to me. As we sat at the card table, my back was to the window. George was facing me. Suddenly, I saw him look hard over my shoulder out of the window. I turned quickly, and just for a moment, I thought I caught a glimpse of something moving.
Man or animal?
I don't quite know. My brother said he had the same feeling. It's uncanny, that's what it is. Something came into that room, and that something killed my sister and dashed the light of reason from my brother's mind. Something devilish it was.
If that should prove to be the case, I fear I shall be of very little assistance, Mr. Tregennis. But short of wrestling with a satanic majesty, I think perhaps we can solve your problem. Come, Watson, we'd best go down to Tredenick Water at once.
This is the house, Mr. Holmes.
Whose carriage is this coming down the drive with the blinds down?
There's somebody in it. Listen.
My brothers. My poor brothers. It's Dr. Richards' carriage. He's taking them to Helston Asylum. It's too awful. My poor brother.
Easy, Tregennis, easy. Pull yourself together.
I'll do my best.
Good man.
Which are the windows of the card room?
This one here.
Oh, look out, Holmes. You've upset the watering can.
Dear, dear, how clumsy of me. Sorry, Tregennis. I'm afraid I've drenched your boots.
No matter, Mr. Holmes, no matter. Shall we go in?
Yes. I have seen all I need to see out here.
This way. The card room is over here.
Do you notice anything, Watson?
No, I can't say that I do.
This is the card room.
I see the window's still open. The housekeeper left it that way, I presume?
Yes, she says it was locked on the inside when she came in.
Quite so. I think we may close it now.
Well, I'll do it, Holmes.
No, let me.
Candles quite gutted out. Yes, cards still on the table. They had not risen from their chairs, I take it, and you left at 10. That sets the hour of death at sometime before 11. Fire burned out. Why a fire? Had they always a fire in this small room on a spring evening?
It was cold and damp last night, Mr. Holmes. The fire was lit shortly after my arrival.
I see. Well, that seems to be about all. No disturbance of any kind. Strange.
Oh, come along, Holmes. Come along. The room gives me the jumps. There's something about the atmosphere. Though death was still hovering in the air.
I wonder. Come, Watson. We will return to our cottage. Should anything occur to me, Mr. Tregennis, I shall communicate with you. It won't do, Watson. It won't do. All the facts are negative.
Well, do you think Mr. Tregennis' account of his actions last night was truthful?
Quite, Watson. Quite. You remember the incident of the spilt watering can? I did that to obtain an impression of his foot.
I take it you succeeded?
I did. With that print as a sample, I was able to trace his movements last night. His story is correct. He left the house at about 10, went straight back to the vicarage and did not return. Nor did anyone else enter or leave that house.
Then it must have been the man or animal they thought they saw in the bushes. He must have returned and frightened them to death.
There was no such man or animal, Watson. Last night was a dark night. Anyone who had the wish to frighten these people would be compelled to put his face against the glass before he could be seen.
Well?
There is a 3-foot flower border outside the card room window. But there are absolutely no footprints there.
Yes, but that means...
It means Mr. Tregennis's sister and her two brothers were alone when death struck the sister down and drove the brothers insane.
But Holmes, that would be supernatural.
I hope not, Watson.
Look, here comes another visitor up our path. Stranger this time. Big, savage-looking fella.
That, my dear Watson, is none other than the famous Dr. Leon Sterndale.
Sterndale, the lion hunter and explorer?
Exactly.
Oh, what's he doing in this neighborhood?
Oh, I've heard he owns a little cottage about 5 miles down the coast. They tell me he lives there absolutely by himself when he isn't off on one of his expeditions. Never mind, Watson. I'll do the honors myself. Come in, Dr. Sterndale, come in.
Mr. Holmes?
Yes. And this is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
How do you do? Mr. Holmes, I've come to you about the tragedy at Dannockwater. The police are utterly at a loss. You have a keener brain.
Pardon me, Dr. Sterndale, but why are you so concerned in this affair?
Well, you see, during my many residences in this locality, I've come to know the family of Tregennis very well.
I see.
Their horrible fate has been a great shock to me, Mr. Holmes.
I'm so sorry.
As a matter of fact, I was on my way to Africa. I got as far as Plymouth when the news reached me this morning. I came straight back to help in the inquiry.
But that would make you lose your ship. One sailed for Africa this afternoon, if I'm not mistaken.
I can take the next.
When did you last see the Tregennis family, Dr. Sterndale?
I saw Brenda, Miss Tregennis, 3 days ago, just as I was leaving for Plymouth.
Oh, so you have been in Plymouth for the last 3 days?
Yes, in Plymouth.
But how did you get the news so quickly? Surely the Plymouth papers didn't carry an account of the matter in this morning's edition?
I received a telegram.
A telegram? Might I ask from whom?
You're very inquisitive, Mr. Holmes.
It is my business, Dr. Sterndale.
Very well. The telegram was sent by the vicar, Mr. Roundkay.
I see.
And now, Mr. Holmes, have you reached any conclusions?
Conclusions? No, that would be a trifle premature. But I have every hope of bringing this matter to a satisfactory termination. Satisfactory to me, that is.
Would you mind telling me if your suspicions point in any particular direction?
I do not feel that this is the moment to answer that question, Dr. Sterndale.
Oh, and I see that I've been wasting my time. I need not prolong this visit. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Close-mouthed fellow, Dr. Sterndale, isn't he, Holmes?
He told me more than he realized, Watson. But he knows even more.
How could he if he was in Plymouth?
But was he, Watson? That statement is something for us to look into.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Act Two of the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
I say, Holmes, must you go on smoking that foul pipe? The atmosphere's so thick I can hardly see across the room as it is. Oh, dear, I feel depressed. Who knows what evil thing is talking abroad in this neighborhood?
Light the lamp, Watson. It's the gathering twilight that makes it gloomy.
Rubbish. Look here, Holmes, what about that Dr. Sterndale? Do you think he did it?
No, Watson. I've been in communication with his Plymouth hotel. His story was correct. He had been there for the past 3 days, and he did receive a telegram from the vicar this morning.
Well, then he couldn't possibly have had anything to do with the Tregennis tragedy last night.
Quite. I didn't think he had a connection with the tragedy. But there is a connection with... Now what?
Mr. Holmes! Oh, Mr. Holmes!
Open the door, Watson. Ah, my dear vicar, come in, come in. Dear me, you look as though you'd seen a ghost.
It's tracked him down. The curse of the family. He's dead. Dead with that same look of terror on his face.
Who's dead?
Mortimer Tregennis, in his study at the vicarage.
Great Scott.
My servant found him there, sitting beside his table, his face turned toward the window, and distorted with that same convulsion of fear that marked the features of his sister. Oh, my poor parish. Satan himself is loose among us. We are devil-ridden, Mr. Holmes. Devil-ridden.
This was his study, Mr. Holmes.
Depressing atmosphere.
It was worse. I had the servant open the window. He's quite ill from shock, poor fellow.
What a terrible look on Tregennis's face, Holmes.
The whole body is contorted and convulsed in a very paroxysm of fear. You've never seen death in this form before, Watson?
No, never.
You know of no poison that would have this effect?
Good heavens, no.
Lamp is lit. It's burning over an hour. Notes the oil consumed. Yet darkness has just set in. Did anyone call at the vicarage this afternoon?
No. I was out myself, but my servant says he let no one in.
Then Tregennis was alone when he...
I wonder. The window was shut at the time of his death, but the lamp was lit. Curious. The window. Let's see. The window. Yes, by Jove, I think I found something.
What's that you're putting in your pocket, Holmes?
And the lamp. Of course, the lamp. Notice this powder which has been spilled on the base of the lamp? Red-brown powder. Give me an envelope, Watson. I must have these specks of powder.
Why are you so excited about the powder, Holmes?
Because it contains the solution of our mystery, Watson. It is the source and the solution.
You haven't touched your supper. What a foul night. The wind's rising again.
Oh, have another cup of tea and be quiet, Watson.
I don't want to be quiet. I want to talk. I'm tired of waiting here listening to that blasted wind and the roar of the water down there below. Why did you send for Dr. Sterndale?
Because he is an authority on obscure African poisons.
Poisons? Why are you interested in poisons?
Watson, there are two striking points in common in both cases under observation.
Yes?
In both cases, the atmosphere of the room had a curious effect on the persons who first entered it. The housekeeper and the vicar's servant were both overcome, as was the doctor who was called
in. That's right. I hadn't thought of that. The room was still stuffy when we entered it.
Right. And in each case, there was combustion going on in the room. The fire in the first case, the lamp in the second, and the lamp was not necessary. It was still daylight when it was lit.
Yes, but I still don't see what...
Something was burned in each case which produced an atmosphere causing strange toxic effects. An unknown poison.
Good heavens.
I believe we have a sample of that poison in the brown powder spilled on the base of the lamp.
Well, how are you going to prove it?
I'm going to burn some of that powder and notice its effect. Just a small pinch of powder. Yes. Perhaps you'd better leave the room, Watson.
And leave you alone in here? Certainly not.
I warn you, it's risky.
Confound that wind. Come along, come along. Let's get it on with it and get it over.
Very well. Place your chair opposite mine. Then we can watch each other for developments. If anything alarming happens, we can end the experiment.
All right. Come on. I'm ready.
Good. I put a pinch of the powder into our lamp.
Oh, I say, what a filthy smell.
Musky, subtle, nauseous.
Listen to the wind, Holmes. I'm afraid
I don't know why. That wind. I can feel my hair rising. Holmes, do you see it? That cloud bank, whirling, black and sinister. It's monstrous. It's concealing something, something too wicked to imagine. Holmes, it's coming nearer and nearer. Can't you smell it? Sulfur and brimstone. You hear that, Holmes? It's hoofbeats. Hoofbeats. I know what it is. I can see it. I can't stand this. It's too terrible. Holmes!
Watson, for the love of heaven, don't give in. Don't breathe. I'll smash the window. I'll smash. There. That's better. Oh. Breathe in, Watson. Breathe it in. It's good, clean air. Why, Joe, what a narrow escape. I had no idea it was so powerful.
I thought I saw...
I know. It's a poison that affects the nerve centers of the imagination. The strain is enough to kill a man or drive him crazy. Hello, there's someone knocking at the door.
So that's what I heard.
The air seems cleared out. Good thing there was a high wind. I'll close the shutters and draw the curtains. Watson, can you open the door now?
Yes, I think so. Phew, my knees are still shaking.
Good evening, Mr. Holmes. You sent for me?
Yes. Come in, Dr. Standale. Come in.
You look rather pale, both of you.
Yes. We've just been conducting a little experiment with the poison that killed Tregennis.
You?
Yes, Dr. Standale. Perhaps you'd like to tell us why you killed Mortimer Tregennis.
I? Preposterous. You can't prove it.
No. Let me tell you how you did it. You came over to the vicarage late this afternoon. You didn't want anyone to know you'd visited Tregennis. He was to let you in himself. But how could you attract his attention? You brought some pebbles with you, pink pebbles from a heap beside your house. You threw these at the study window, where you knew Tregennis was working. I found some of these pebbles on the windowsill. Tregennis came downstairs, let you in himself. You had a talk with him, made him light his lamp, placed a pinch of the poison powder in the flame, and left.
You're right, Mr. Holmes. I did kill Mortimer Tregennis. But I'm not guilty of the other atrocity. I swear I'm not.
I believe you, Dr. Sterndale. But you know who did it. Perhaps you'd better tell us about it.
Very well. It was Mortimer Tregennis.
What?
He admitted it before he died. Mr. Holmes, I've been in love with Brenda Tregennis for many years. We were to have been married when my work in Africa was finished. I've lived so long in places where man is a law unto himself. He killed Brenda in cold blood. He killed her. I have nothing else to live for. By heaven, I'd do it again.
How did Mortimer Tregennis get hold of the poison? It was something unusual, almost unknown.
Yes, it was powdered pez diable.
Pez diable? Devil's foot, eh?
Yes, a root found in Africa. Shaped like a foot, half human, half goat-like. I have the only specimen in England.
And you showed it to Tregennis?
Yes, he came over the other afternoon when I was packing. He was interested in my African curiosities, particularly this powder. How he took it, I can't say. I thought no more of the matter until I had received the vicar's telegram and learned how they died. I returned at once. Looking into the tragedy, I was convinced Mortimer Tregennis was the murderer, that he'd done it to gain control of the family fortune. There was the crime, but what was to be his punishment? What jury would believe such a fantastic story? No, I decided to take the law into my own hands. Perhaps if you ever loved anyone, you'll know how I felt.
Dr. Sterndale, what were your plans when you set out for Plymouth?
I had intended to bury myself in Central Africa. My work is only half finished.
Go and finish the other half, Dr. Sterndale. I do not feel called upon to prevent you.
What a gruesome story, Dr. Watson.
Yes, next to the famous Hound of the Baskerville adventure, that was the most gruesome experience that we ever had.
There's just one thing I'd like to know. What did you think you saw in that cloud of smoke?
Mr. Bell, you will have to believe me when I tell you it was too horrible to mention. Just to think of it is enough to make my blood run cold.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was adapted by Edith Meiser from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Devil's Foot. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of California Pictures. Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. The Sherlock Holmes series is produced by Tom McKnight. This is Joseph Bell speaking for Kremel Hair Tonic and Kremel Shampoo, and inviting you to be with us next week at this same time. Kremel Hair Tonic and Kremel Shampoo present the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Well, once again, it's time to keep that weekly appointment with our good friend and host, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bell. Draw up your chair and settle down.
Thank you.
That's it.
All ready with tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure, Dr.
Yes,
Watson?
Bill. And as I was going over my notes on the case, I came across this. I think it might interest you.
What is it? It looks like an ordinary piece of clay.
It is clay, but I assure you it's very far from ordinary. This piece of dried earth enabled Sherlock Holmes to solve one of the most diabolical murders that we ever encountered. I call the case The Singular Affair of the Babbling Butler.
Now, Dr. Watson, how about The Singular Affair of the Babbling Butler?
Well, that adventure began on a November evening many years ago. For 4 days, a dense yellow fog had virtually marooned Holmes and me in our Baker Street lodgings. The first day, the great man had spent in cross-indexing his huge book of references. The second and third had been patiently occupied upon a subject which he had recently made his hobby, the music of the Middle Ages. But when on the fourth day, we still saw the heavy brown swirl drifting past us and condensing in oily drops upon the window panes, my old friend's active and impatient nature began to assert itself. He started to pace restlessly about our room in a fever of suppressed energy.
Confound this fog.
Oh, do stop pacing up and down, Holmes. No good getting angry with the weather. That's one problem even you can't do anything about.
It isn't the weather, Watson. It's the infernal dullness of the London criminal these days. Come over here to the window.
Huh? What is it, Holmes?
Look out there. See how the figures loom up, are dimly seen, and then blend once more into the fog. What a night for a thief, for a murderer, Watson. He could roam London as a tiger does the jungle, unseen until he pounces. It's fortunate for this community that I'm not a criminal.
Yes, it is indeed.
Suppose that I were Brooks, or Woodhouse, or any of the 50 men who have good reason for taking my life. How long could I survive against my own pursuit? A summons, a bogus appointment, and all would be over.
What a depressing thought.
The only thing that depresses me is inactivity. Why doesn't something happen? Why doesn't someone come to me with a problem?
It sounds as if your prayer's been answered.
I hope so. See who it is, Watson, will you? It'll save Mrs. Hudson a trip.
Yes, of course. All right, Mrs. Hudson. Ask the gentleman to come up, please. This way up, sir. You wish to see Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, sir, I do.
Then come along in. My name's Watson, Dr. Watson, and this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson? My name is Jenkins. I'm butler to Sir Roderick Martin.
Sir Roderick Martin? Indeed. Sit down, Jenkins.
No, thank you, sir.
Sir Roderick Martin, isn't he the theatrical producer?
Yes, Watson. And he is quite famous in his own circle for his cynicism and a certain mordant wit. Your master needs my services, I presume, Jenkins?
Yes, Mr. Holmes, he does. He's in desperate trouble, and he'd like you to come over to his house at once.
What kind of trouble is he in?
Oh, please don't ask any questions, sir. Just come to the house and see for yourselves.
I've long wanted to meet Sir Roderick. I believe it was he who gave currency to that pun. Though he might be more humble, there's no police like Holmes.
That's more funny. No police like Holmes.
I'm glad it amuses you, Watson.
Oh, sir.
Oh, I implore you to come with. Please, gentlemen, come with me.
Whatever your master's problems may be, I think I would enjoy a discussion with him. perhaps on the topic of humility. Yes, Jenkins, we'll accompany you at once.
This is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, sir.
How do you do, Sir Roger?
How do you do?
Jenkins. Oh, how very odd. Now, why should Jenkins make such a meteoric exit?
I presume, Sir Roderick, he wished to leave us alone.
Indeed, what a singularly depressing thought.
Well, sir, now that he's gone, you can talk quite freely.
My dear Dr. Watson, I've been in the habit of talking freely ever since I had the pleasure of insulting my nurse at the age of 4. She was a peculiarly revolting female by the name of Pearl. After 44 years, I still can't think of a more inappropriate name for her.
Sir Roderick, your childhood reminiscences are fascinating, but supposing we get down to business.
Very well, Holmes. To what do I owe the, well, for lack of a better word, the pleasure of this visit?
Your butler came to fetch us.
He said that you were in desperate trouble and needed our help.
Jenkins told you that. I can only assume that he stole more than his usual quota of brandy today. I've noticed in the past that alcohol seems to give him the quaintest delusions.
Then you don't wish to consult me professionally?
No, Holmes, I don't. Nor do I wish the services of a doctor. Therefore, I suggest you both retire and ask Jenkins for your hats and an explanation. Good evening, gentlemen.
It's one of his stupid jokes, Holmes. The bounder's trying to make a fool of you.
I think not, Watson. It'd be a singularly pointless joke and far below his standard. No, I believe there's some other game afoot. Though Sir Roderick dismissed us somewhat unceremoniously, I think we may still be reasonably certain of a welcome in the servants' quarters.
You're going to talk to the butler?
Yes, Watson. I'm certain he's neither been drinking nor suffering from delusions. I'm convinced that the man is in mortal terror of his life.
Oh, thank heavens you came to see me, Mr. Holmes.
How could we resist it when Sir Roderick told us that your entire story was a lie?
Oh, you must forgive me, gentlemen. I was desperate with fear, and I had to attract your attention.
But why? You've accomplished your purpose now. You've thoroughly roused my curiosity. But I repeat, why?
Because I'm in terror of my life, sir. Someone's trying to murder me,
sir. Well, what reason have you for saying that, Jenkins?
Last night an attempt was made to kill me.
Oh? Please describe the circumstances.
Well, sir, I was carrying a keg of wine down into the cellar. It slipped from my arms and hit the stairs, and then the stairs collapsed. When I examined them, I found that they'd been sawed almost through.
I assume that you are the only member of the household who ever visits the wine cellar?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That was a deliberate trap to break my neck. Oh, if I'd stepped down, it would have been the end of me. Oh, Mr. Holmes, I'm only a servant. I couldn't pay you much.
Now, my dear Jenkins, I assure you that Mr. Holmes is as interested in preventing the murder of a servant as he is in saving the life of a prime minister.
Jenkins, have you any idea who might want to kill you?
There's only one person on earth with a motive for killing me, sir. And that's my master.
Sir Roderick Martin. Oh, come, 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 my dear man. You're surely mistaken.
What reason do you have for suspecting him?
Well, it's this way, Mr. Holmes. A year ago, a certain lady killed herself when Sir Roderick jilted her.
Gracious.
Well, the affair was all hushed up, and nobody knew Sir Roderick was even involved. But her brother swore to avenge her death. That brother is a very close friend of Sir Roderick's, but has never suspected him.
Complicated situation, eh, Holmes?
Yes, Watson. I take it, Jenkins, you are the only person who knows that your master was guilty?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And if I were dead, his secret would be safe. Oh, Mr. Holmes, please, what can I do? I know he's planning my death. You've got to save me, sir.
Jenkins, my advice is this. Write a full statement of the circumstances in this case. Sign and seal it and hand it over to me for safekeeping. Inform your master that if anything happens to you, I shall make public the contents of the statement.
That's a very good idea, huh?
I'll do that, sir. I'll do that. I'll bring it to you in the morning.
Splendid. Come on, Watson. Oh, by the way, Jenkins, what's the name of your doctor?
My doctor, sir? I never said that.
You never said what?
Oh, yeah, doctor. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Dr. David Stanley in Wimpole Street.
Dr. David Stanley. I see. Well, good night, Jenkins. We shall expect you in the morning.
But why are we going to see Dr. Stanley?
Firstly, because I want his physician's opinion as to whether Jenkins might be suffering from hysterical delusions.
Well, as a doctor myself, I say that's more likely. I must say his actions tonight hardly seem the behavior of a sane man.
When a man is badly frightened, Watson, it's sometimes hard to judge his actions by more rational standards. Incidentally, did you notice the way he started when I asked him the name of his doctor? Almost certainly, Dr. David Stanley is the vengeful killer.
By George, now that you mention it, I do remember hearing some gossip in Harley Street about Stanley's sister killing herself. But nobody seemed to know the motive.
Here's the house, Watson.
Well, let's hope the doctor's at home.
If he isn't, we haven't come very far out of our way.
Want me to wait for you, Governor?
No, thank you, cabby. Here you are.
Ah, thank you, Governor. Giddy up.
I can hear a piano playing. Someone is at home.
That seems an eminently logical deduction.
There's no need to be funny, Holmes.
Good evening.
My name is Sherlock Holmes, and this is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do? I'm Mrs. Stanley.
We wondered if we might have a few words with your husband.
With David? Well, come in, won't you, gentlemen? Mr. Holmes, you're a detective, aren't you?
Yes, Mrs. Stanley.
I hope you haven't come here to talk to David about his sister's death.
Not directly, madam. Though my mission is not unconnected with that tragedy.
Then I can't let you see.
Well, really, Mrs. Stanley, my friend only wishes
to... No, gentlemen. For the sake of his sanity, I daren't let you talk to him. Ever since his sister died, he's been like a soul tormented. He spends most of his time in there playing those frightening compositions of his on the piano. I can't let him be subjected to any more questioning about his sister. Even I daren't mention her.
Sylvia, I've heard voices. Who are these gentlemen?
It's Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, dear.
How do you do, Dr. Stanley?
I hope we're not intruding, sir.
The great Sherlock Holmes and his friend Dr. Watson intruding? Well, of course not. I'm flattered. Come in, gentlemen.
Please don't say anything about his sister's death.
Don't worry, Mrs. Stanley. We won't.
No, of course.
Holmes, I believe you're something of a musician. I'd like your opinion of this.
David, dear, they haven't come here to listen to
music. I don't care what they came here for. This is what they're going to hear. Well, how'd you like it?
A strange, savage melody, Dr. Stanley.
Yes, indeed, sir. Rather depressing, if you don't mind my saying so.
No, why shouldn't it be? When it's finished, I call it... Threnody for a dead sister. That's what you've come to see me about, isn't it, Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Now, David, dear, you must...
Sylvia, I should prefer that you leave us alone.
But, David...
I said alone, Sylvia.
Very well.
Sylvia's a girl who can't face up to facts. But I can. Tell me, Holmes, what have you found out about my sister's death?
Dr. Stanley, I'm afraid you're laboring under misapprehension. I know nothing of your sister. I came here to talk about Jenkins, Sir Roderick Martin's
butler. He told us that you were his physician.
Oh, Jenkins, eh? What do you want to know about him?
Has he been ill recently?
Well, a few months ago, he had a bad attack of enteric fever. Why do you ask?
Enteric sometimes leaves bad after effects. Would you say, Doctor, that Jenkins has suffered no lasting damage? Hallucinations, for instance?
Time he was out of his head for a while, but I'd say he's perfectly sound now.
Thank you, Dr. Stanley. That's all we wanted to know.
You mean to say that you came here simply to find out about the state of Jenkins' sanity?
Just that, sir. Good evening.
Good night, Dr. Stanley.
I think you had something else on your mind before you talked to Sylvia.
Well, Jenkins may be sane, but that man's on the edge of a mental collapse, if I ever saw one.
I quite agree, Watson. Mrs. Stanley seems to have gone upstairs. I think we'd let ourselves out.
Well, Holmes, that was rather a fruitless trip. We didn't learn much there, except that Jenkins is compos mentis.
I disagree, old chap. We learned a great deal more than that. Tomorrow morning, I shall lose no time in calling on Sir Roderick again.
That horrible fellow? For heaven's sake, why?
Because he's the focal point in a grim tragedy. Inevitably, either he will kill Jenkins, or Dr. Stanley will kill him.
My dear Holmes, I'm accustomed to facing two brown eggs at breakfast, two brown eggs lightly boiled, followed by a leisurely perusal of the Times. I see no reason why this day should commence any differently.
Sir Roderick, I've explained to you.
You've explained nothing, including your own presumption, Holmes. I can see no cause for your meddling, even if I understood precisely what you were driving at, which I don't.
Surely, Sir Roderick, you must see that my friend is trying to protect you.
Dr. Watson, I once had the acute misfortune to read one of your shockingly florid stories.
What?
I can only assume that your gross imagination has infected your daily life.
Since your own safety seems to be a matter of indifference to you, Sir Roderick, I may point out that I know too much if you plan on being a danger yourself.
Holmes, you're impertinent, a quality which is attractive only in a younger person and of a different sex. What is even more unpardonable, you're boring. Please leave and take this bumbling veterinary surgeon with you.
It's extremely offensive.
Before I leave, I insist on knowing one thing. Where is your butler, Jenkins? A new man opened the door just now.
Jenkins? Oh, yes. I omitted to tell you. Jenkins has left my service.
You discharged him, I suppose?
Not exactly, though it is my invariable rule to discharge any servant found guilty of a crime.
A crime? And what was Jenkins' crime?
He committed suicide.
And now, Act Two of the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Dr. Watson, this story really has me on the edge of my chair. So the butler Jenkins had committed suicide?
Well, that's what Sir Roderick told us, Mr. Bell, though we had great difficulty in persuading him to let us examine the dead man's room. Finally, after Sherlock Holmes had pointed out that if we couldn't handle the case, then Scotland Yard certainly would, we were allowed to visit that room of death. The evidence of suicide was apparent. After a brief examination, Holmes turned to me and said,
"What do you make of it, Watson?"
"Obvious signs of strychnine poisoning, Holmes. Quite clearly, a suicide."
"Yes. The other servants told us that they had to break the door down to get in. Was locked and bolted from the inside."
"Your examination proved that there was no sign of the lock having been tampered with."
"Precisely. And he drank the poison from this glass here by the bed." "Yes, I'd say that there's been nothing in this glass but strychnine and water. Hello. What's this on the carpet?"
"Looks like a piece of clay."
"It is. And it bears the imprint of a heel."
"From a man's boot. Look at the size."
"And observe the color of the clay, Watson. This particular specimen is quite rare. I shall take it back to Baker Street and examine it."
"I can't see any logic in this case, Holmes. After all, people terrified of murder don't go committing suicide."
"Patience, old fellow. I'm convinced that this is one case where an hour in the laboratory may aid the solution more than all the logic in the world."
"Well, Holmes, what do your tests with the microscope tell you?"
"First of all, that the glass contained nothing but strychnine and water."
"Nobody could drink that without knowing it. That proves that it was suicide."
"Not necessarily, Watson. I've also tested the clay. In addition to being a very rare clay, it's oddly impregnated with certain acids and chemicals. Exactly as it might be if a doctor picked it up on his heel outside his house and later went into his laboratory."
"A doctor? That would explain the poison."
"Exactly. Jenkins was under his doctor's care. Supposing the physician prescribed a draught to be taken on retiring, why question its peculiarly bitter taste? Jenkins was a frightened man. Undoubtedly, he bolted and locked his door last night and then, trustingly, drank the fatal poison."
"All of which points to Dr. Stanley."
"Quite."
"But I don't understand it. He had a motive for murdering Sir Roderick, and Sir Roderick had a motive for murdering Jenkins. But all the evidence points to the fact that Dr. Stanley murdered Jenkins. It doesn't make any sense."
"But it does, Watson. Precise, accurate, and terrifying sense. We must return to Sir Roderick's house at once. There's not a moment to be lost." "
Holmes, you and your friend here are positively pachydermatous. Twice I've told you to mind your own business, and yet you come back for more insults. Am I to assume that you find my personal charm so utterly irresistible?
On the contrary, sir, you can assume that your personal charm utterly escapes us.
Sir Roderick, the only reason we've returned is because I'm convinced you're in grave danger. As I told you before, Holmes, I'm eminently capable of taking care of myself. In any case, I'm expecting Dr. Stanley, my physician, here in a few minutes.
Sir Roderick, by all you hold sacred...
I hold nothing sacred, Holmes, save human life. By which, of course, I mean my own.
Then, for the sake of your own life, sir, allow us to slip behind that tapestry while your doctor visits you.
Behind the arras, eh? The proper place for rats, if I remember my Hamlet correctly. Oh, that's undoubtedly the doctor now.
Then please let us hide. You won't regret it, I promise you.
Very well, you may hide. Scurry away.
Come on, Watson.
Right, you're home.
Come in.
Roderick, I had to see you.
Yes, so it would appear. Sylvia, if you have to come making dramatic entrances in my house at an hour that virtually represents the crack of dawn, I do wish you'd take a little more pains with your ensemble.
Roderick, you're...
Your dress is only suitable for tea and crumpets with the vicar's wife at Tooting Beck.
Oh, Roderick, stop trying to be facetious. I came here because I had to talk to you before David got here.
Well, I'm expecting him at any moment.
Yes, I know that. You're his closest friend, Roderick. You've got to do something for him. He's ill. He's mentally unbalanced. All he thinks about and talks about and dreams about is Angela. He's even composed a horrible piece of music that he calls...
Sylvia!
David!
What are you doing here?
Everyone's being extraordinarily melodramatic this morning. It's a pity, David, but you have not caught your wife and me in a compromising situation. Chiefly, I admit, because I find her somewhat colorless.
Roderick, how dare
you! I suggest that you leave us, my dear.
You!
I believe the word you're groping for is beast.
You beast!
Roderick, you put up a convincing caricature of being the inhuman man of the world. But if people only knew how you'd stood by me during the past year...
No, David, this has been a most emotional morning. For heaven's sake, don't you become lachrymose.
I'm not. I'm just saying that if you hadn't stood by me since Angela's death, I don't know what I'd have done.
You'd probably been back on your feet long before this, but you came here this morning in your professional capacity, David.
Yes, I know, Roderick. How are you feeling? Don't like your color.
I don't like my symptoms. I can't sleep. My nerves have been more than usually on edge for the past 3 weeks, David. You promised me some medicine, you know.
I brought it with me. It's in my bag here. You have a glass and some water?
Yes, on the sideboard
there. Good. Well, this will steady you up quite a bit. Now I'll add a little water. So, here you are, Roderick. Drink this.
I wouldn't, Sir Roderick. It won't do much good to the only thing you hold sacred.
Sherlock Holmes! What are you doing here?
Your opening conversation begins to become somewhat monotonous, Dr. Stanley. I'm here because I don't like to see murder committed, even Sir Roderick.
You mean that Dr. Stanley just tried to poison him?
Certainly. Just as he poisoned the butler, Jenkins.
Mr. Holmes, he has no motive.
I tried to protect Jenkins against Sir Roderick. I was stupid enough not to see the other motive at first. Riddles are fascinating, Holmes, but not when they become personal. What are you talking about? It's a simple equation, Sir Roderick. Dr. Stanley attended Jenkins during his bout of enteric. He told us himself that the butler was delirious. It was then that he must have learned Jenkins' secret, that Jenkins was the only human being who knew that Sir Roderick was responsible for Angela's suicide. Logically, he had to die first.
But I still don't see that...
Dr. Stanley does, despite his silence. Jenkins was the only human being who knew that Dr. Stanley had a motive for killing Sir Roderick. This is very melodramatic, Holmes, but I haven't the faintest idea what you're talking about.
Nor have I, except that you seem to be laboring under the delusion that I killed Jenkins.
Of course you did. You had to, before you could kill Sir Roderick. Had Jenkins lived, he would have been suspicious of his master's death. But if he were out of the way, no one would have connected Sir Roderick's close friend and physician with his murder. The cellar stairs attempt failed. But last night's poison did not.
And now he's trying to repeat the pattern. The glass over there contains strychnine and water.
Of course it does.
I assure you, this medicine is perfectly harmless. To prove it, I shall drink it myself. Stop him, Watson.
Put that down. Put it down, I say. It's too late.
That was meant for you, Roderick. It was too good for you. Considering the way you... treated my sister Angela. Angela.
He's dead, Holmes.
Yes. And you, Sir Roderick, have escaped a brother's vengeance. I'm almost sorry that I insisted on trying to save your wretched life.
Well, just because you have saved it, don't expect anything as conventional as thanks or remorse. My only regret is that during the past few minutes, you've enjoyed an experience granted to very few men on this earth.
And what is that, may I ask?
You have seen me speechless. Tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Bruce Partington Plans. The music was composed and conducted by Alex Steinert. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of California Pictures. Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. This is Joseph Bell speaking for Kreml Hair Tonic and Kreml Shampoo, and inviting you to be with us next week at this same time.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, copyright 2020 by Timely Audio.